allow me to make a general comment. I don't mind emotion. I think this is part of it. Do you remember the slide I showed during my part of my presentation? I said something like, you know, you can strongly present your views, but don't do it without ego. So let's. I just want to say, let us just be careful how we ask questions or answer. There we go. Oh, I'm sorry.
Auch noch das rasch zu sagen, also wenn jemand irgendwelche Kraftausdrücke benutzt, spricht das meistens mehr für die Person als für die Gemeinde. Das ist ganz grundsätzlich, da werde ich gar nicht so viel ausdrücken. Jetzt, ich persönlich vertraue in die Politik. Bitte seien Sie da nicht naiv. Wir haben in der Schweiz ein grosses System mit Check and Balance. Das heisst, wir haben nirgends ein Machtzentrum. Und diese Initiative gibt eigentlich dem Bundesrat sehr, sehr viel Macht. Bundesrat sehr. Das ist eigentlich ein falsches Konzept. Und Sie hätten die Initiative konkret ausformulieren können, wie man sie zum Beispiel umsetzen soll. Wenn der Initiativtext, meine Damen und Herren, lässt zu, dass man beim heutigen System bleibt, das lässt er zu. Die Interpretationsspielraum ist so groß, man kann beim heutigen System bleiben. Und ich meine nicht so, ich meine nicht provokativ, aber oder man kann bis zu einem sowjetischen System gehen, das man hat. Der Initiativtext lässt alles zu. Er ist überhaupt nicht so formuliert, wie Sie Vollgeld verstehen. Überhaupt nicht. Er lässt alles zu. Warum? Ist mir auch klar. Weil Sie sehen ja, wenn Sie Vollgeld sehr konkret formulieren, wo überall die Probleme auftauchen könnten. Darum müsste es sehr, sehr viel Spielraum geben. Und Sie gehen davon aus, und da habe ich große Achtung vor Ihnen, dass man das im Sinne der Initianten auslegt, diesen Spielraum. Ich kann Ihnen auch sagen, im Sinne wessen, da wird im Parlament ganz viel lobbyiert, dann schlussendlich. Und es ist nicht sichergestellt, dass im Sinne der Initianten es ausgelegt wird. An und für sich. Und dann möchte ich auch noch betonen, meine Funktion ist vom Beruf her Elektroingenieur. Ich bin Unternehmer seit 30 Jahren, ich weiß, wie man mit Geld umgeht, im Gegensatz zu anderen Leuten hier drin behaupte. Ich weiß, wie man Löhne bezahlt, ich weiß, wie man Aufträge hat. Aber finanztheoretisch bin ich nicht hell auf der Platte. Aber bitte, Sie stimmen mit 8 Millionen Schweizer ab. Ich glaube, ich repräsentiere den Durchschnitt relativ gut.
Anyone else would like to make a comment? Or somebody didn't understand all that? Go ahead.
Well, I understand my German is not quite as good as it should be. But I think it seems like there's a tendency to get stuck in the weeds here. You know, there's certain aspects of the Fullgeld proposal about how you would take extract money out of the system or put it in that seems secondary to the key issue here, which the key issue is that we have a financial system that's really great until it's not, until it's really bad. And as Martin was pointing out, it's produced all kinds of misery for all kinds of people, but not the bankers. The bankers have somehow gotten through just fine and taken care of themselves, and they've taken care of the politicians in the course, and that's why we've resurrected the old system as part of the quote reform. But the big points here are we have a public good, a financial marketplace, which marketplaces don't operate on their own. They have to be kind of set up by the governments. You think about the Middle Ages where you had trade fairs and the government would designate maybe Madrid to be the fair in Spain. They didn't say every city should have its own trade fair because then nobody would know where to go. So they coordinated everybody going to that trade fair because it was a public good, that information about where the trade fair was going to be held. Here we've got a public good, which is the financial highway system. We can't have the people operating it gamble with it. So right away you get to the conclusion you can't have leverage. Now Fullgeld is a part of a process of moving the financial system to be engaged just in intermediation with no leverage, because it restricts the ability of banks to make deposits, great deposits, which is a form of leverage, to take in debt that way. So I think if we think about the fundamentals here, the big picture, we've got a public good, we've got, and it hasn't been treated as a public good, but it should be, and this is not foreigners coming in and trying to test something out in Switzerland. I think it's the Swiss figuring out on their own that what the rest of the world and they have doesn't work. It hasn't worked for most of the people. So, again, I think what we need is a mutual fund system with just equity finance mutual funds, and one of those is a cash mutual fund, and that's what Pool Guild is ultimately about, having the ability to put your money in the central bank and keep the payment system perfectly safe, and then the rest of the banking system has to move quickly to being a mutual fund industry, and that's tried and tested in the U.S. Again, a third of the financial system is equity finance mutual funds. None of them had a single problem in the Great Recession. Had we had the entire system set up that way, we would never have had a Great Recession. We would not have had the stock market drop 60%, 10% unemployment, 8.5 million people thrown out of work. All those problems would not have arisen. So look at the big picture. Don't get stuck in the weeds here.
Okay, one more, excuse me, response from Alexander, and then we'll go to another question, okay?
You agree.
Disagree with Mr. Kotlikoff. We are not voting on his proposal. We are voting on the Folger initiative. Mm-hmm. And the points, the weak points of that initiative, they are dramatic. Mm-hmm. They are going to fundamentally lower the living standards in Switzerland. And then there's a last point that I would like to make. We probably have the best monetary system on this planet.
Sure.
There's no other currency that is as stable as the Swiss franc. You can compare it to the US dollar, to any other currency. We have come through the financial crisis relatively easy, relatively, I say. And now, why are we in a position now to make such an experiment? Can anybody explain this to me? Why do we have to be the apes here? You know, so that the others can learn whether it works or not. Except for countries like Zimbabwe and Venezuela, there are no other cases where they try to fall guilt.
All right. Way out, black shirt, way in the back.
I agree. We are having really a very interesting debate, and I'm very happy that there are different viewpoints, because then we become. We get this kind of energy to think more deep and to understand that we really have to change the system, as it was mentioned also this morning. I think we are not talking about real facts here. It's like a religion. And there is an economist, his name was Kenneth Boulding. He said, anyone who believes exponential growth can go on forever on a limited planet is either a madman or an economist. He was an economist himself, and he has this self-critical view which is missing in the most of the economics people. This morning we talked mainly about growth.
Just a minute. Okay. So remember where you are, ladies and gentlemen. Go ahead.
This morning we talked so many statistics. What we have seen, it's mainly about GDP growth. We didn't change anything after Momo, you know. We still are in the same area. We still want more growth. But more growth, what does it mean? We destroy our planet. And this was no issue this morning. The destruction of our planet and the life quality of human beings, animals and so on, which will decrease. So if we have a compulsion to growth, and you don't want to have a money which is created free of interest, free of loan, free to be a credit, I mean, this could be a solution to reduce this compulsion to exponential growth. And that, my question goes to Sergio Rossi, for example. You as a professor, what are the alternatives if we remain in that system to reduce this compulsion to growth?
Thank you. Sergio.
Thank you for this question. It is a seminal question, I think. It is perhaps for the next GDI conference. I think that one should distinguish between economic development and economic growth. The first is about an improvement in the qualitative dimension of economic activity, which should be, again, in the interest of the whole population of the whole world. And economic growth, as Binswanger, for instance, has been explaining very well, is just for the financial sector and the shareholders and the managers of financial industry. I think that in advanced economies, so to speak, we should take care of the quality of our life, the quality of the environment and of society. And I'm in favor of the heterodox approach to economic development, which means that the economic activity should be again in the interest of the society as a whole, and society as a whole should be aware that the environment should be preserved. We have a natural capital environment which we should preserve for our children and grandchildren. And I think the mainstream view about sustainable development is very different. It means that we have a kind of interaction between economic society and the environment, but the major points are still those of economic activity and the financial sector in particular. So we have to change this perspective to make sure that for the next generations the environment is not only protected, but still that there are a number of human beings that have seminal needs, food, education, shelter, and so forth. And this pertains to, in a sense, the sustainable development part of economic growth. We should try again to make the real economic system, in a sense, be at the origin of welfare, well-being for the whole community across the world. And finance should be again instrumental in order for these objectives to be achieved, and always keeping in mind that we have just one planet and we have to preserve it.
I could agree on you that we should think about growing of our society. No problem with this. But we have also to accept that the existing society, that has nothing to do with the full money, the existing society is completely oriented of growing. Just a few examples. Also, we have growing of students every year. We have all every year people want more in degrees, more education. We have a retirement system who is built on growing. Without growing, it will crash, and so on. We can change all this, and then it will also change the society, but it has nothing to do with full money. Nothing. We have a society who is based on growing, in education, in retirement system, in healthcare, and so on. Everyone wants the best treatment, more treatment. Everyone wants the retirement system is guaranteed. It's not financed, it's only financed by future growth. Everyone wants an education system, more education, more care in education, all this we want everywhere. Where? I have never a position in the parliament where someone says we want less next year. Only more, everyone more. And to stop this means everyone should say, okay, next year I want not more than this year. Then we will change a lot. But we are not on this way in the moment, far away from this way.
Carolina?
Yes, I said, so when we are asking the question, why is it that we need to grow? And why is it that we destroy the environment? I told before that there was a lot of discussions around that in different conferences, and that these three things, that we have an unstable system, that we have short-termism in the financial markets, that we have a system that really requires growth, is sort of the key. And what I realize is that usually then the answer comes quickly without being very clear about what are the symptoms and what are the causes to me. And the answer is usually, oh, we need green growth. And I just a few days ago, I read a study from the MIT there on several of these studies where they looked, and that was interestingly, Michael Ende mentioned the microprocessing, that was the topic 40 years ago. And interestingly, that recent study looked at whether we can get more efficient in the current system by using less material in the microprocessing, so building smaller pieces, more efficient, new technology. And they found out that actually the resources went up. Even though new technology was new, green, efficient, things were introduced. So they said the researchers came to the conclusion that the demand was not going down, even though all these improvements happened. And at the same time, what they came up with was really astonishing to me. They said they conclude that this is much more difficult than just new technology. It's actually a cultural change that would be needed. But this has something to do with us relating to each other, human interactions, with communicating differently, listening. I was really astonished to read that in an MIT study about growth, but I think asking back that question, what is it? And then that comes back to what I said. Our current monetary system is created by hierarchy and creates hierarchy, leads to a hierarchical structure, leads to competition of these things and a concentration of power. And these are the things that I think Mr. Noza said today, those things are, the power structures are in the dark, and it's about whether taking them into the political arena, at least into the light, whether you like that or not, but from the dark to the light, and then being able to see what we do with it and how they actually are.
Bill? Sir, you can clap as you wish. I give you permission.
The question was asked, why the compulsion for growth? And one of the things that I've observed at the OECD is this, where I'm the chair of the Economic Development Review Committee that does all the country surveys. So we run through this thing over and over and over again. Why the compulsion for growth? Because most people are over-indebted. And most countries are over-indebted. And there is a simple equation that basically tells you what you need to do to stabilize your debt. And that equation basically says that the primary surplus, let's say for a government, is equal to R, the interest rate, minus G, the growth rate, times the ratio of debt over to G&E. Okay? So the reaction, in a sense, is to say, well, we obviously need more G. That's going to help us, isn't it, to grow our way out of the debt. But the problem that's being pointed out here is that, of course, the environmental implications of that are obviously implications that we just simply can't accept. Then you say, well, let's get the R down. But if you keep the interest rates down through financial repression, or the real interest rates down through more inflation, then we've got a whole bunch of other sort of intrusions into the economy that are going to create problems for people's living standards, etc. So the R solution is no good, the G solution is no good, and the fundamental issue is the other thing in the equation, which is the debt over G&E. And if it's too high, we need facilities to write it off. And we need restructuring before it becomes too late. Because if you, I think as Herbstein said, if something is unsustainable, it will stop. Right? The only question is whether it will stop in an orderly way or a disorderly way. So we have to find some means of getting an orderly restructuring of the debt. But I finish up with the last point that Katerina made, which is, in the final analysis, this all has to do with power and social stratification. Because the people that own the debts, right? Sorry, not own the debts. The people that own the assets that are the counterpart of the debt absolutely don't want to talk about writing it off. And that's precisely what we need to do in the current circumstances. And we need to be prepared for the next crisis before it comes. We can help prevent the crisis with debt restructuring, or we can have good sovereign laws that will help us to get through the crisis when it does occur. But these kinds of legislative changes, I think, are absolutely imperative.
Joseph, yeah. You wanted to say something.
Well, yes, I would have to say very many things on what the naysayers have said. But I'm afraid that would enter us into a very unpleasant kind of really nitty discussion and would take much time. So I would prefer to just make one point, one fundamental point. And the question involved here, the fundamental question is, oh no, let me start differently. Mr. Müller said at the beginning of his contribution, he made a confession of belief. He said, I am a liberal. So am I. I'm a liberal. And what we call in Germany, I'm an ordo-liberal. And I guess, according to what you have said, I would say you are an ultra-liberal. which is actually an inappropriate word, because ultra-liberalism today, that's in fact a program of financial and industrial global corporatism. It's having oligopolistic markets. It's about domineering chains of production and provision. And that's your program of ultra-liberalism. We do not want to have more regulation, as you said. We simply want to have a proper legal framework. And the basic question, the fundamental question here is, if we do nothing, the process of privatization of money will go on. And the basic question here is, do we still want to have, for constitutional reasons only, but also for functional reasons of the economy, do we want to maintain monetary sovereignty of nation states or community of nation states? Or do we agree with the privatization of money that will get another boost by the raise of the cryptocurrencies? Which is no debt money, by the way. Cryptocurrency is no debt money.
That's right.
And seems to be a success story, right? Okay. That was just an aside. And so, you see, to a large extent, the bank money regime we have today, that's a money system that is already largely privatized. And it is backed up, it is being serviced, it is being accommodated by the central banks and even by the government. Our governments are so oblivious of their monetary prerogatives. And so that's the basic decision we have to make. Do we want monetary sovereignty of nation states to be abolished and have privatization of money, or do we want to maintain monetary sovereignty? That's the fundamental question. And that means yes or no for sovereign money.
Okay. I wouldn't call myself like an ultra-liberal, I see myself as an ordo-liberal as well. And actually in the book where we call for the end of banking, we make clear that for us a functioning price system is a public good. And for us it's absolutely clear that money has to be organized as a public good. Money is like an institution, it's like railroad, like roads. It's an institution that helps to actually gain the fruits from the division of labor. So we don't want to privatize money. But what I say is, and that's maybe a bit like a call for my fellow colleagues on the no side, what I think is that what we have today has nothing to do with actual markets on finance. We have these large banks that have a huge part of their liabilities are guaranteed by us, the public. What we see is like a flawed private-public partnership. It has nothing to do with private markets. And yes, we want to establish markets for credit because we think credit is something private. You give credit to someone else. Money is public. And to come back to Katharina, I also think that if we get rid of banking and if we have a true market of credit, this actually democratizes finance, because people who save and invest get actually much more power. You decentralize the whole system. So if you set up a financial system properly, as we proposed it in our book, and get rid of banking, you have money as a public infrastructure and have credit as a private arrangement, you would have more responsibility and accountability in this system. Because people who give credit are responsible for what they are doing. So to make a final point, yes, I'm an ordo-liberal as well, but I think that the structures need to be different than the structures that you propose.
Pardon me, you're an expert. I just want to say something which maybe, hang on, yeah, we'll get back. I want to, just a word, because the United States is sort of the only country in the world where the word liberal has been totally turned on its head. And in all the rest of the world, the word liberal means something totally different. And I think you said you're a classical liberal. So I just wanted, some of you may not be aware of that distinction, but this is an Americanism that we have developed that does not work in the rest of the world. So we tend to use the word classical liberal to say this is not socialistic or left, this is, I'm more of a free thinker, etc. I just use this word sometimes, Alexander, sorry.
I think it's important that people realize we are not going to vote on some philosophical question. We are not going to vote on whether we feel good or bad about the financial system. I'm not so very happy about the financial system. By the way, I have made some proposals to what I think is going to improve it. We are going to vote exactly on the paragraphs that are written in the initiative. And when I read these paragraphs, I'm getting really, really afraid.
You don't understand them.
Hey, they are clear.
So I think I probably understand it.
No,
maybe
you're not a lawyer.
That's up to you to decide on this. But please, go home, read it, try to understand what are the implications of it. This is really not about philosophy. It's not about environment. It's not that we are not going to change the monetary system and then we're going to save the environment. That has nothing to do together. And what I'm missing here in the discussion is exactly the discussion about what are these paragraphs, what are the implications. It's not about philosophy. It's not, look, I think Wolf said something like, the currencies, we all agree that the current system is, did he say shitty?
Stinks.
I agree. Everybody has to agree. I think there are ways that you can improve it. But I claim, and I'm 100% sure, if we change the system with this initiative, we will have a double-stinking system. It's going to impoverish us. By the way, we are going to solve the environment problem, like Venezuela. They have no... So if you look at the resources that they use, these guys, they're way down, because the economy is really, I shouldn't say, I think I'm not allowed to say, the F word, right? Okay,
I'll allow it.
I mean, in that sense, we are going to solve the environment. I mean, resource use in Switzerland will decrease. But I say this is not the right instrument. If you want to do something for the environment, there are other ways you can do it. There are other laws which can address this issue directly, not through a change in the monetary system, which is going to reduce our well-being substantially.
All right, Larry, and then that's it. And we go. All right. Go ahead. Yes.
Can I have a mic? Yes.
It's been too much hand waving. Yes.
I must talk directly to Mr. Moser and Berenson. Personal remark: my name is Professor Mastronardi, and I'm the author of the text of this constitution. In this. So, what I would like to make clear is that your critiques are below the text. You do not understand the text. And I would not want this critique you have pronounced to be uncriticized. I cannot go into details, but I will gladly give you a seminar on the text of this initiative if we meet once, three together. Anytime. And you may learn something. It is possible. I believe in your learning capacity. Although you are being very polemic in what you say.
I appreciate it.
Yes. Same here.
Right.
Maybe two things only. Just two details.
Yeah.
Berenson, you said, well, this is nothing new that we have the booking system in the competence of the Confederation. The booking money is now a legal tender.
Excuse me?
The thing is that Buchgeld is now in the constitution. Now, what you call money is not money, it is just a promise of money. And we can promise everything from the sky down to the earth, and this can be internationally true. Also, your dollars, Mr., can be given as a promise, and they will always be given as a promise, but the promise may not be kept with full geld unless you have full geld. The thing is, we have distinguished between promise of money and legal tender. There's a categorical difference.
That's why I said.
No, please, let me finish.
It's only a promise to pay out legal tender on demand. That's what I said.
Let me
so
finish.
Be free.
The thing is that you have not understood that we make a shift of paradigm with the term of money. money now is debt. And Mr. Moser, you have always talked about debts and credits and all these things. They will stay credits, of course. But that is not the Zahlungsverkehr's money, the money we pay with. Only the money we pay with is being changed by the initiative. You say the initiative is very open, it permits everything. No, 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 it does not permit everything. It just doesn't treat everything. If you are suggesting that we are resolving all the problems of the financial system, well, we are not. No, we are not. We resolve one problem. And that will resolve stringently, and your politicians cannot change that. You will have to do what is necessary, and there are many things that you can add to it or not. But the thing that we really want to do is fix the constitution.
Aber ich möchte Ihnen auch Ich habe schon oftmals gelernt, dass Klatschen das Denken nicht verstört. Ich möchte Ihnen auch eine saubere Antwort geben. Wir haben das Initiativkomitee in der Kommission. Folie 1 des Initiativkomitee-Vertreters in der Kommission war, Ziel ist es, Financial Bubbles zu verhindern. Die letzte Folie, da stand drauf, was die Initiative alles nicht löst. Und dort stand drauf, sie werden keine Financial Bubbles verhindern können. Das stand dort drauf. Und dann hat man natürlich dann schon etwas Bedenken, wenn vom Initiativkomitee das Ziel, das auf Folie 1 kommt, auf der letzten Folie wieder gefragt wird. Und wenn dann schon kam noch das Größte, sage ich Ihnen auch, wie das Initiativkomitee gefragt, was Sie denn machen würden in der ganzen Situation. Oder? Und dann haben Sie gesagt, es sei ein Versuch wert. Und ich muss Ihnen ehrlich sagen, ich kann nicht Versuche machen.
Aber Sie machen ja heute einen.
Nein, wir haben heute ein System. Ich bin jederzeit mit Ihnen bereit, das zu verbessern. Machen wir ein konkretes Beispiel. Wir haben momentan die Problematik, dass wir den Eigenmietwert abschaffen wollen und die Abzugsfähigkeit der Hypothekarzinsen. Das ist das größte Debtproblem, das wir haben in der Schweiz. Mit Abstand das größte. Doch, es sind die private Verschuldung ist die höchste auf dem Eigentum. Und Sie haben auch recht, die Banken wollen das nicht, weil das sind super Geldquellen. Helfen Sie uns doch dort. Helfen Sie uns doch dort, weil ich bin auch der Ansicht, Eigentumsbürger sind starke Bürger. Ich möchte das. Aber Sie werden mit der Vollgeldinitiative dieses Problem nicht lösen. Die Initianten sagen zwar explizit, sie lösen es nicht. Das heißt, diese Verschuldung bleibt. Aber Sie werden die Verschuldung verteuern. Das ist auch klar. Weil Sie ja das Geld des Zahlungsfähigen nicht mehr verwenden können, um das zu finanzieren, oder? Also wird man das verteuern, das muss man den Leuten auch sauber sagen. Ich persönlich hätte lieber, dass die persönliche Verschuldung zurückgeht, als liberaler Mensch. Weil Leute, die verschuldet sind, sind nicht frei. Menschen, die weniger Schulden haben, sind eher freier, tendenziell, oder? Und können freier bestimmen. Und dann wäre es eine wichtige Sache. Und dort könnten Sie uns helfen, statt mit so geldtheoretischen Dingen, die schlussendlich ein Turnout haben, wo keiner hier drin weiß, dass es besser wird. Und sonst würde ich von Ihnen einen Scheck haben, wo Sie unterschreiben, dass Sie jeden entschädigen, der schlechter gestellt ist, wenn Ihre Initiative angenommen ist.
Anybody else want to comment on that? No? You know, I'm the moderator. I'm not supposed to say something, so I'm going to break more of the rules. And then we'll get back to this, because you're next. I want to go back to Bill, and a big part of this discussion is debt. And it just hit me while I was standing up here. This is obviously a brand new problem. We've never had it before. It reminded me of rules that were put into place. Are you sitting down? 5,000 years ago, in the Mosaic Code, every 50 years is a year of Jubilee, which is the abolition of all debt. Isn't that interesting? By the way, as far as I know, it was never done.
No, it was done.
Was it done?
It was done. It's the reason the Jew stayed in Babylon 70 years.
Well, but I agree. But that was not structured. My whole point was the attempt was to legally structure and plan for the abolition of debt once every 50 years. That's really
49,
my point.
49.
Well, it was the 50th. 49. Okay. 7 times 7. All right, forget the details.
7 times 7.
Yes, I know. But there was a year following, didn't there? Okay, yes, back there is somebody. Yes.
Mine is very much an open-ended question that begins with a statement. I think this is not about philosophy. This is not predominantly about the environment, but it is very much about growth. And there's nothing wrong with wanting more growth. I think the Yes Camp has presented their view on what in this proposed paradigm would be the source of growth, and this would be the debt will be channeled to productive activities, which will mean more investment in productive activities by companies and hence more growth. I think the burden falls on the no camp to clarify what kind of future do we have to look forward to if we stay within the actual, within the existing system, where the only thing, as we have seen from Mr. Wolf's presentation, that's growing exponentially is growth. Is debt. Where will fundamental economic growth come from if nothing has changed? Thank you.
Comments?
Yeah. Again, I mean, if you want to address growth, well, I think the much more direct way would be to tax, say, fuel, or you tax capital. I mean, there are so many instruments that you can use if you want to, for some reason, lower growth. Use these instruments. Why do you use an initiative, you know, for a change in the monetary system where we actually have no clue what the outcome will be? And that's what I don't understand. That's why I don't understand the discussion about growth, about environment and all these things, because there are many instruments which you can use and directly target these problems.
Briefly answering that question on the channeling of money, so say allocating money. And the important thing to know is that during the last 40 years, the bank money has been created, depending on the country, 60 to 70 to 80%, not for real economic investment, but money has been created for funding public over-indebtedness, public expenditure, for leveraging financial investments in non-GDP contributing investments. And above all, newly created money has been funding housing bubbles. It went into mortgages and in commercial and real estate. And so that has created the bubbles, and that has created all the debt. And we will maintain that, and that's really a big headache when interest rates will start to raise again, to increase. Now, in a sovereign money system, I repeat myself, there is no intention to exert control over the allocation of money. The monetary authority shall create the money and put it into circulation by way of genuine seigniorage or by way of direct central bank credit to banks and other financial institutions. Now, then it depends on what the money holders, so finally the entire society, where they decide to put their money. That might not be totally different, but the sovereign money system excludes direct leveraging of non-GDP contributing finance. So that's what we can say. And the rest depends on the functioning of the financial markets. And just one other word concerning the idea of green growth, or even growth petering out in a medium-term future in another 50 years or so. A sovereign money system does not have an inbuilt and inherent drive to grow. A sovereign money system does not depend on creating ever more money simply for the purpose of creating ever more seigniorage. That's not the purpose of sovereign money. And so sovereign money system does not need to, the money supply does not need to grow in a sovereign money system. And so it can be, from under this angle, it can be compatible with a future no-growth scenario. But, by the way, I don't think that will solve the ecological problem. I think solving the ecological problem depends on creating a green industrial metabolism.
Let me... And then who is next? I just want to say some of the points that Joseph just brought up were some of the major points that Richard Werner brought up. And he apologized, he had to fly back. So that's why I just wanted to say that.
Nur ganz kurz, wenn Sie das 2-Minuten-Argumentarium und der Initianten durchlegen, dann kommt das Wort Wachstum gar nicht vor. Es geht nicht um Wachstum, ja oder nein. Bitte bleiben Sie bei der Initiative. Das ist ein philosophisches Projekt, wenn Sie über Wachstum reden. Initiative ist etwas ganz anderes. Im 2-Minuten-Argumentarium wird es wohl auf den Punkt bringen, oder geht es nicht um Wachstum?
To an argument, so to speak.
Bill?
It's about something completely different, not growth.
Yeah, I wanted to ask a question to the people that are opposed to the initiative, and particularly to you, because they've written this book, you've talked about it, I've been very supportive of the book, and when I looked at the agenda and I saw that you were on the nay side, I actually was very surprised, because it did seem to me that this initiative actually is working along the general lines that the book proposes. The only thing I can conclude, and I just want to check this with you, is that you're not so much opposed to the concept, but you are opposed to the process of implementation. The devil is in the details, and much of the stuff that you contend is being proposed in the initiative would actually not be helpful. And the traditional things, and I mean, I've heard them mentioned here today, the traditional things that people have said about initiatives of this nature are, we have a boundary problem, which I think you were referring to. People will create stuff that looks like money. How do you stop them from doing it? That's a big issue. Charles Goodhart has been on about it for ages and ages. The second issue is the physical dominance problem. The minute you start linking up, the government's going to spend it and you're going to print it. Okay? Then we have a situation that can get worrisomely out of hand, which people worry about a lot. There's the whole question of the unintended consequences. My whole career, frankly, has been, well, in a certain sense, as a central banker, my motto has been, I'm terribly sorry, it seemed like a good idea at the time. And this has happened repeatedly, so I think one needs sober second thought about what the unintended consequences might be. And lastly, and I just sort of throw this out, and it's linked to the boundary problem question. In the middle 1980s, when I was in Canada, we were about the first country to say, we are going to control the money supply, okay? And we're going to put out an inelastic amount of M1, and you can either swallow it or not. Well, the implication of an inelastic supply of money, with a demand for money that can fluctuate, because people decide, as we mentioned here, I'm sorry, I'll do my clearing in euros or, you know, whatever it might be. The implication, just the simple diagram, is big changes in interest rates, big changes in the exchange rate, with consequences of which we are not clear. So I guess my conclusion, I put it to you here, my conclusion is that we should really proceed with this investigation. I think it's probably too early to say yes at this point, but the discussion should continue. And we should evaluate this proposal not as a standalone, and this was mentioned by a lot of people too, but going back to Larry and other things, there are a lot of other ways in which the current system can be improved, and we should be looking at those other things to see whether this initiative has got more net benefits over costs than other solutions. So I think this is great stuff, but bit too early.
Excuse me, please, but briefly. Your example does not apply. Sovereign money is not about monetarism. Monetarism was ill-conceived from the beginning, and sovereign money is not a repetition of monetarism. Excuse me for interrupting.
Just quick question while I'm on the no side. It's really about an initiative here, and I think it is not the right thing to do. And it's funny, I like to start with a quote, like a different quote by Mankiw. You can see computers everywhere except in this discussion. At the beginning, David Bossert said, like, the digital revolution is a huge transformation, and we just neglect it. So that's really my point. If you look where banking originated, it was in the Italian Renaissance. It was when double entry bookkeeping was developed. So it was really a technological thing. You had paper, you had a pen, and you did this double entry bookkeeping. And we are in a totally new time with this digital revolution. We can now link these entities directly. We no longer need these central balance sheets in the middle of the system, but we can link the balance sheets directly. So that's why I really don't feel comfortable on the yes side, because it's, in my view, it's really looking backward and we should move on. And what I said, I mean, from a philosophical point with public money and private credit, it goes a bit in that direction, but it's much more radical, and it's actually trying to tackle the problem on the level of accounting, on the level of how corporates can organize, how limited liability, this concept, is defined. And our claim is that we can no longer allow large companies which enjoy limited liability to actually build a liability against society. Limited liability companies are a good thing because you can invest and you can only lose what you have invested. So it fosters innovation and entrepreneurship. But we have to limit in the digital age that they can build up systemic risk and can build up a liability against society. So our solution, I would say, is much more radical, much more fundamental, and much better suited for the digital age.
Well, I think we should, again, think about this proposal and whether to vote for it. Is it a step towards realizing that this is, thinking the financial system as a public good and figuring out how to preserve it? You know, there's this discussion about growth. Martin told us we lost a decade in many countries of growth. So how we set up the financial system matters. I don't think we should wait for another crisis and to think this over. We should do something right away to start moving towards protecting this public good. And the danger to the public good is leverage and opacity. So the question is this a movement away from leverage and away from opacity? And more will come from that, and it won't necessarily be once the banks see that they lost this game of making money and becoming more leveraged in the same process, using some other instrument that wasn't particularly ruled out by this vote. I don't think they're likely to come to that conclusion and say, "Well, let's just try and do an end run," because they'll realize that the next referendum or the regulators will rule that out as basically being covered by the new constitution. Instead, they'll say, well, what's the ultimate goal here? Well, the ultimate goal is not for us to have leverage and for us to be transparent. So let's do things that make ourselves equity financed and transparent, and that's mutual fund, equity financed mutual funds. So I see this as a first step. I don't think we should wait. We've waited long enough. We've waited several hundred years of financial crises. It's time to move.
Those of you sitting in the audience, I'm so sorry. You probably noticed by now the way you get called is depending on how frantic your hand is. Go ahead.
The question I had was regarding Iceland, and they've obviously embraced sovereign money. So does anybody on the panel actually have any experiences or insights on how that's gotten off the block? Because they've embraced it. So, yes. They've actually embraced it, but they've got. I mean, we're voting about it, but Iceland has actually embraced sovereign money.
I can just say we did a study about the world who is really using this system and in the commission, and the answer was, it's the answer of the government, not my research is nowhere.
Yeah, they've not done it.
We asked especially also Iceland. They discuss about it, but it's not done.
Yeah, it is not done. The person who wrote the report was planning on being here. He's registered, etc. He's very sick. So, yes, I'm sorry. Sorry. Yes. Definitely your turn.
Ja, ich fasse mich kurz. Herr Bedenken hat gesagt, dass die übliche Forderung im Vorgeldsystem kann man nicht die Geldmenge reduzieren. Sie sagen, mit dem Vorgeldsystem kommt das geht ja nur durch Ausgaben in Ungarn oder also durch Schulden und dienstlose Auszahlungen. Wenn man sich aber die Mühe gibt, den Initiativtext ganz zu lesen, dann steht da auch, dass die Schweizer Nationalbank Darlehen bedienen kann an die Banken. Zum Beispiel, wenn man mittelfristig oder kurzfristig die Geldmenge ausweiten kann. Also wenn Sie sagen, im Vollgeldsystem kommt das Geld nur durch Ausgaben in Ungarn, dann ist das eine Lüge.
Ich kann vielleicht hier eine Antwort geben, weil wenn man auf die Webseite geht, sprechen Sie auch über Rückstellungen. Das ist auch eine Antwort darauf. Und übrigens, zum Beispiel sind auch andere Instrumente, die SNB kann sogenannte SNB-Bonds herausgeben. Das heißt, man kann sich schulden, um Geld aus dem System zurückzuholen. Das Problem an dieser Sache ist, und darum habe ich es so stark betont, wenn Sie nochmal auf die Webseite gehen, und ich weiß nicht, ob Sie die Zahlen geändert haben, aber ich habe es ja hier gezeigt, oder? Die Initianten sprechen, die haben 350 Milliarden zur Verfügung plötzlich. Das können wir verschenken. Sie haben mich korrigiert und gesagt, der Herr Huber, nein, es sind nicht 350 Milliarden, es sind 55 Milliarden. Das Geld ist aus der Bilanz der SNB draußen und das heißt, Sie müssen mit anderen Instrumenten, die etwas kosten übrigens, müssen Sie Geld abschöpfen. Ich sage nicht, dass es technisch nicht möglich ist, aber wenn Sie 550 Milliarden verschenken, von jedem Franken, den Sie drucken neu in einem Jahr, auch quasi verschenken, dann haben Sie dieses Geld nicht in Ihrer Bilanz. Und dann können Sie eigentlich nicht mehr so einfach abschöpfen, wie es heute geht, weil die Schweiz hat es auch jeden Franken, den sie schafft. Nochmal, schreibt sie als Liability in die Bilanz und hat dann einen Aktienkauf in Euro. Das ist diese Bilanzausweitung und Sie kann jederzeit alles zurücknehmen. Sie kann jederzeit die ganze Schweizer Geldmenge ganz abschöpfen, auf Null, macht es süchtig. Aber Sie haben diese Möglichkeiten. Das ist meine Kritik. Sie schwärmen von all diesem Geld, das da plötzlich gratis da ist und verschenkt werden kann. Und Sie verstehen nicht, was das für Implikationen hat für die Geldmarktstabilität.
It's beside the point what you are saying, because so the 550 billion Swiss francs, at first, that is not an amount of money that will be handed out at once.
Steht im Text. Lesen Sie Ihre eigene Website.
That's a process. Please listen to me. That's a process over the years. Firstly and secondly, this is not really about an expansion of the monetary aggregate M1, but this is about the recomposition of the monetary aggregate M1. It's a recomposition in that today's bank money is being step by step replaced by central bank money. So that's not an addition to the entire stock of money, it's a recomposition of it.
It would be really useful if you once go to the Swiss National Bank and you look how they implement monetary policy, you look at the balance sheets operation that they do, if you would really carefully look at it, you would not talk like this anymore.
Somebody else, must be somebody way in the back. That side of the room is very quiet. Okay, well, we got a great waiting hand here. Okay. Oh, sorry, Martin. Okay, you're next.
Wir haben jetzt immer über die Rolle der Zentralbanken gesprochen. Meine Frage ist, wie sollen denn die Zentralbanken organisiert werden in den beiden Systemen? Wer soll in welchen Verfahren die währungspolitischen Entscheide treffen? Soll das politisch gesteuert werden oder sollen das unabhängige Experten machen? Und gibt es da Unterschiede zwischen den beiden Systemen in der Frage, wie wir die Zentralbanken organisieren?
Heute ist es ja so gelöst, dass man sagt, es geht um das Inflationsziel und um die Versorgung mit der wirtschaftlichen Kapital. Das ist autonom bei der Nationalbank. Oder neu wird diese Kompetenz, so wie ich das interpretiere, eigentlich, sagen wir mal, mehr oder weniger verpolitisiert. Und zwar wegen dem Paragraphen, der vorhin erwähnt wurde, wo gesagt wird, das Geld soll schuldenfrei geschöpft werden, aber es kann auch den Banken gegeben werden im Sinne mit einer Schuld. Das heißt, jetzt müsste man natürlich diskutieren, im neuen System, wie kann man Schulden freischöpfen, wann ist Normalfall, wann ist nicht ein Normalfall, wann sollte man nicht Schulden freischöpfen und so weiter. Darüber kann man diskutieren. Und da sage ich Ihnen, und das ist eben der Grund, warum ich die Politik etwas misstraue, wenn man ein Freihandelsabkommen dann mit Indonesien abschließt, und die Landwirtschaft da unter Druck kommt, dann ist das für die Landwirtschaft eine Sondersituation, oder? Und wenn der Tourismus unter Druck kommt, ist das für den Tourismus eine Sondersituation. Und da wird man dann relativ schnell in der Politik beginnen zu diskutieren, soll man jetzt für das eine Ausnahme machen, keine Ausnahme machen, soll man da jetzt Schulden freischöpfen, nicht Schulden freischöpfen. Wir werden über solche Dinge diskutieren. Darum glaube ich, das, was Sie gesagt haben, ist eigentlich ein Anker, wo Sie sagen, Sie möchten den Engpass des Systems auffangen. Und ich verstehe die Formulierung, die Sie gemeint haben. Das werden wir in der Politik anders interpretieren, weil in der Politik, wenn wir die Verfassung interpretieren, und dort ist Ihre Meinung nicht dazu geschrieben, nicht dazu geschrieben,
ja, der Verfassungstext ist
klar. Und der Verfassungstext lässt zu, eine schuldenfreie Schöpfung oder eine Schöpfung mit Schulden.
Genau.
Er lässt, und das muss irgendjemand entscheiden.
Genau.
Und das wird politisch entschieden.
Klar.
Mit Parteifarben und so weiter und so fort. Und mit Lobbyistenresultat. Das gebe ich Ihnen schriftlich politisch entschieden. Und das Resultat, behaupte ich, wird nicht besser sein als das Resultat heute.
So, Karina, was du noch sagen?
Ich finde das eine wichtige Frage. Nochmal, ich möchte darauf zurückkommen. Heute haben wir die Trennung von Geldpolitik und Fiskalpolitik. Das heißt, die Geldpolitik ist unabhängig. Mhm. Damit die Geldpolitik unabhängig sein kann, braucht sie ihre eigene Bilanz. Nur wenn sie ihre eigene Bilanz hat, kann sie intervenieren, und zwar auf beide Seiten. Geld schöpfen, Geld abschöpfen. Wenn sie jetzt aber das Geld verschenken, dann hat die SNB keine Bilanz mehr oder eine stark reduzierte Bilanz. Sie kann dann unter Umständen abhängig werden vom Bund und muss dann den Bund fragen, hey, kannst du intervenieren, wir haben zu viel Geld, wir haben Inflation, kannst du bitte eine Steuer, mit einer Steuer dieses Geld abschöpfen. Das heißt, sie trennen das. Wir sind extrem gut gefahren damit, mit dieser Unabhängigkeit einer Zentralbank, die nicht durch die Politik bestimmt wird, die eben unabhängig ist. Und wenn wir jetzt das mit dieser Folgeinitiative werden wir das verpolitisieren, ganz klar. Und diese Trennung werden wir auflösen.
Das stimmt nicht. Herr Behrensen, im Verfassungstext steht, dass die Nationalbank wie das Bundesgericht nur dem Gesetz unterstellt ist. Die gleiche Unabhängigkeit wie das Bundesgericht.
Und wer macht das Gesetz?
Was machen Sie?
Wer macht das Gesetz?
Das ist die allgemeine abstrakte Norm. Das ist
nein,
das ist
nicht
der Fall.
Excuse me.
Nicht.
This is what's happening right now. Be prepared, please.
Was ist diese Unabhängigkeit?
Warum soll ich?
Please. This is not the spirit of the GDI, what's happening right now. I came here to listen to different people with different opinions on different subjects. And there are people who are supporting this concrete initiative, and there are people who are against. So be it. But let's now, in the spirit of this event, in the spirit of this institution, talk about what we can do and improve. So let's look at what Uli projected at the beginning, the fundamental questions, and talk about them. Do we have a common understanding that these are the things we should look at, focus on? Do we have their common ground? That is the starting point.
No.
And we are not talking here about the Abstimmungskampf, Herr Noser. Sorry, Herr Noser, you're coming here as a politician. You have not been in the commission where the subject has been treated, Mr. Noser, and you come up as a speaker of that very commission in the parliament with an absolute lousy speech. So please, why don't you just focus?
Lousy speech. Cheers to you. Cheers to you.
Ich habe jetzt sehr viel Pro und sehr viel Kontra gehört heute und ich habe gemerkt, ich kann beide Seiten, also Aspekte von beiden Seiten verstehen. Ich frage mich, ich habe den Eindruck, eigentlich wir haben ein gemeinsames, wir adressieren ein gemeinsames Problem, nämlich die Frage, wie können wir diese Welt gerade retten? Und ich frage mich, ob es nicht möglich wäre, diese große Intelligenz, die hier vorne versammelt ist, wobei ich noch ein bisschen mehr Betonung auf die weibliche Präsenz vielleicht legen würde.
Schwarze und Hindi und Spanien.
Ob man die nicht zusammenbringen kann und gemeinsam über ein Problem nachdenken kann und versuchen kann, gemeinsam Lösungen zu finden, statt sich gegenseitig vorzuwerfen oder beziehungsweise zu fragen, was für oder gegen, sondern was ist eigentlich das, wofür wir gemeinsam leben können.
Just quickly then, let's agree that we no longer talk about that particular initiative, but about how to change the financial system.
No.
So we're no longer just saying, no, that's a stupid initiative, and no, you're stupid. So that we, can we agree that we move past that and no longer say, like,
no,
we're now talking about the initiative? Maybe that helps. I don't know how you see it, Uli.
I think there's a lot of truth there. I mean, it's what I tried to do to bring us together. I mean, ultimately, I'm the one who asked all of you. We have got to listen to one another. And there happens to be a referendum that is coming. I recognize that. But it in itself is not perfect, does not answer all of these questions. I think we're all aware of that. Mind you, there's a whole regulatory framework. I know I'm not supposed to be a speaker, but there's a whole regulatory framework that is created after that. Can we incorporate? I think the objections, a number of these objections are very real. We need to listen and say, how can we improve the system with the step that is currently before us? Is optimal, is it, this is a question, is it optimal to vote yes or no to create the maximum improvement in a system that we all agree is unstable, that we all have difficulties with? I don't think a single speaker today has been happy with not just where we are at, but where we are going. And so the issue really, as Oliver, as you said, isn't to fight one another, is we have got to sit down and say, ladies and gentlemen, this isn't working in the long run. We're a train, we're heading for a cliff. We are. I really honestly believe, I really might become a speaker now, I really honestly believe that the next depression we're going to have is going to be worse than the 30s. So what are we going to do about that today while there is still time? And nobody, you know, like I said in one of my slides, nobody knows everything about anything. We all have bits and pieces that we need to put together. We happen to be faced with a yes or no choice. I realize that. And binary choices are always difficult. They always are. But the nature of a binary choice is difficult. So how do we optimize the next issue that is before us? That's really part of me. I'm supposed to moderate, but that's Larry.
I think one point it's worth keeping in mind when we think about voting yes or no for this. You might think, well, if I voted yes and it actually got passed, we'd have a whole different world than we have today. But if you look at the statistics, the country already has most its M1 more than 100% backed by reserves. I mean, the ratio of reserves to M1, if I looked up the right numbers on the internet in the break here, is bigger than one by a fair margin. So it's not like the kind of macro economy would be dramatically different. What it is would be a vote for preserving safety into the future, for not getting back into some of the problems of the past, and for getting a conversation going about what's wrong, why did we move this way, what's wrong with the financial system as it was, what's the core problem. Again, if you just keep talking about leverage and opacity, you'll be right on the right track. And this will prevent us, because we already have a lot of reserves in the banking system to protect the deposits, and not just in Switzerland, in the US and Japan and the UK. So there has been a big movement towards narrow money in the recent, you know, the last 8 years, 10 years on its own through government policy. So I don't think you should worry about some kind of overnight macroeconomic dislocation associated with this plan going through. I think it's you know, just kind of a work, the next logical step. We got something that has kept us safe for a bit. Let's preserve that into the future and let's build on that.
Sergio? No, sorry, then Katarina.
Katarina?
Yeah, go ahead, Sergio.
Okay, well, I think that as someone of you has pointed out, we should discuss not about really those issues that the Folgeld Initiative is trying to address or perhaps solve eventually, but we have to change the banking system we are actually in, because the banking system is at the origin of the crisis, of the financial crisis, and unless we are believing that or being illuded that Basel III or Basel IV agreements are going to solve the issues, I think we have to understand that it's not just a behavioral problem, it is a systemic structural problem, and we have to change the structure and the way the system works at the banking sector level. And it's not about the management of banks, it's not about bankers' compensation, it's really about how banks do address any demand for credit. And we know that and central banks have been actually recognizing it recently, that banks do originate money when they open credit lines. And I think we might perhaps be inspired by the Peel Act in 1844, 20 years after David Ricardo put forward such a proposal. We have to be inspired by the reform that the Bank of England went through, separating the issuance of money from the granting of credit in two bookkeeping departments. I think we should improve on our accounting system at the banking level and introduce at the banking sector level, not for central banks only, but at the banking sector level, I mean for commercial banks, this distinction between providing credit lines to any kinds of agents for GDP or non-GDP transactions, as Richard Werner has dubbed it, and also providing for an explicit recognition of the money issuance that banks provide. I think non-GDP transactions should be financed with pre-existing savings deposits, whereas GDP transactions should be allowed to be financed with new credit lines starting out of scratch, ex nihilo, because we increase the money supply thereby, but we also increase produced output, and there are no inflationary pressures thereby. Whereas there are an inflationary pressure, there is an inflationary pressure, even though not on the good market, when commercial banks increase the money supply by our new credit lines that are used for non-GDP transactions, mainly for market, financial market transactions.
Well,
depending if there's a direct reaction to that. Was there a direct reaction to that? Because mine was more a more general observation.
Go for it.
Okay. Well, while I was listening to these different votes and quotes and suggestions, I was remembering, and I really appreciate that, that was during the entire day today, that first quote, I think, that you did, or that first slide, which is, it was, I think, nobody knows everything about anything. And that just came up again and again during that discussion now. And for me, this is also key to the solution. I really appreciate that we can sit here together with such a high-level audience and speakers and address this question about changing the monetary system, or what does it have to do with all the crises that we have, which is a discussion that rarely happens in these kind of environments. So this is a great thing, and also, as it has been mentioned before, the fact that all actually of us agreed on that, that the current way we have organized it does not work anymore. So these are like very, very good starting points. When I look what I read or what I heard, this nobody knows anything about or everything about anything, this, to me, one aspect comes up, and that is that feeling that key part of the problem is that we were focusing over the last, I don't know, decades or centuries of having a very focused view when organizing the financial and the monetary system. And excluding, and also perhaps discussing that within a very closed group of people within our society. And I do believe that this I could say, crisis that we are in terms of everyone agreeing we can't continue as we are before. This is also a chance. It's a chance to really open up the discussion and listen to different voices that were not yet be heard. And that's perhaps also what was tried here. So all these questions, what does it do with the environment? What does it have, what kind of implication does it have for our behavior in terms of do we cooperate or do we fight against each other? And what kind of language do we use when working within that paradigm? So I think that has a huge, huge potential. And I do believe that going into some kind of a co-creation mode is actually deeply necessary. And part of that is that we don't yet have the answers.
Can we, this poor man has had his hand up forever. This is going to be the last question unless we all agree we're going to keep on sitting here. Time-wise, this is sort of just, go ahead.
Thank you very much. Ich bin ein ehemaliger Banker. Ich war mindestens 10 Jahre CFO einer der großen Banken. Und ich kann noch heute die Bankbilanz und eben auch das Außenbilanzgeschäft immer noch lesen und verstehen. Ich bin der Meinung, dass die Vorgängerinitiative sehr ehrenwert ist. Im Grundsatz, in der Debatte, sie ist aber keine echte Lösung der Probleme. Und weshalb? Ich weiß, wie eine Bank Buchgeld schaffen kann. Und sie hat hier ganz verschiedene Möglichkeiten. Und die eine Möglichkeit, die hier fokussiert wird in dieser Vorgängerinitiative, sind nur die Guthaben auf dem Transaktionskonto. Das ist ein minor issue. Die Banken kreieren Buchgeld auf ganz andere Weise. Zum Beispiel eben über das Finanzgeschäft, Securities Lending, Repo-Geschäft etc. Das sind die ganz großen Leverages, die die Banken nutzen. Und leider muss ich sagen, in meiner Zeit, seit ich im Bankgeschäft eingestiegen bin und bis heute habe ich keine Bank gesehen, die Konkurs gegangen ist aufgrund von Buchgeldschaffung im eigentlichen Bankgeschäft, Geld entgegennehmen und ausleihen. Es hat Banken gegeben, kleine Banken, die haben Misswirtschaft im Kreditgeschäft betrieben und die wurden übernommen. Einzig und allein die Sparkasse, Baron-Leihkasse Thun, das war ein Sonderfall, oder den hat man dann nie mehr kopiert. Was aber geschehen ist, ist, dass vor allem die ganz großen Banken, die Global Players, Buchgeld schaffen, um Eigengeschäfte zu betreiben, also Spekulation. Und wenn Sie an die UBS, an diese Intervention des Staates bei der UBS denken, kommt das alleine aus Eigengeschäften, in denen Sie riesige Positionen aufgebaut haben, im Nichtwert. Werthaltige Aktiven, oder? Diese Subprime-Loans, etc., etc. Es hat andere Banken gegeben in Europa, die haben dasselbe auch gemacht. Und wenn es eine erste in die richtige Richtung gehende Initiative gab, dann war die von einem früheren Präsidenten des FED, nämlich diesen riesigen Banken, weltweit tätigen Banken, das Trading on our own, die Spekulation zu limitieren. Leider wurde das wieder rückgängig gemacht durch den jetzigen Präsidenten.
Das ist Absatz 4 in dieser Initiative. Begrenzen des Eigenhandels.
You want to make a comment, Larry?
I think my German was good enough to understand most of what you said. I think you're saying that the failures of the financial system were not connected to the creation of deposits. There was not really a run on deposits in the Great Recession here because we had deposit insurance. And it wasn't centered in central banks, it was centered in investment banks. They were using repo and other means of basically making money and borrow leveraging. And so that's why I keep coming back to say that let's adopt full gold, but let's understand where we're headed. What we're heading to is getting rid of the leverage in the financial system,
You got your thumb up. Just want to make sure everybody said, you know, maybe everybody can agree on that. We want to get rid of the leverage, and we want to get rid of the opacity, because the two go hand in hand. If banks are not being disclosed as what they're doing, then people are not going to be willing to buy equity because they don't know what they're investing in, and therefore they will be willing to lend to a financial institution because at least they have some promise in some states of the world to get something back for sure. But the government has a big role here in disclosure. It doesn't need to have the individual financial companies say, well, we verified this mortgage and here's what it's all about, because they can lie and they can do a shoddy job. So this is public information, it's a public good. The government has to be directly involved in disclosure. So that's how you can have, we don't have to have heavy regulation here. If we have disclosure and equity investment, we can let the financial middlemen, the mutual funds, the equity mutual funds, compete with each other, and we don't have to have tell them, well, they can only raise funds to invest in the real sector, raise funds to invest in this particular activity. The government should not be involved in that at all. We should have a financial system that's really highly competitive, but is also safe for the public, that realizes there's a public good and a public role for the government. And if people want to gamble, if the guys running these banks want to go off on their own and gamble on their own account, they should be allowed, they should be free to do that, but they shouldn't gamble with a public good, with our jobs and our future and our kids' jobs. That's the bottom line. So I agree with you 100%.
Thank you.
I've had a zero on my clock for quite a while. Can we say thank you to everybody and Chris?